Michael Smith, it is episode 103 of the Canes Cast. And you know what?
What's that?
It's almost time for hockey.
Intro music. It is almost time for hockey. Training camp starts in, well, actually, it starts tomorrow. If you're listening to this on Wednesday, September 11th, it starts on Thursday with training, medical testing and physicals. That's the boring stuff for us, at least. They get on the ice on Friday for the first day of training camp. And then the first preseason game is in, what, less than a week?
Yep.
Oh, wow. Where has the time gone?
It goes by quickly, my friend.
It really does, especially when there's a short off season.
It stops for no man. Tuesday, September 17th in Ooh. Tampa Bay.
Jeez.
Enjoy your flight to Tampa.
And then back here.
On Wednesday, September 18th, where people get to take in the brand new video board.
Yes, it's on right now.
It is on. There are graphics.
They're testing it.
They are.
Things aren't yet complete, graphics-wise.
Well, here you go. Let's upset strength and conditioning coach Bill Burniston before training camp is really official underway.
Well, let's be honest.
Much like the Death Star, it's not fully operational yet.
Yes.
But once it is.
It's in the testing phase.
It'll be the most powerful force in the universe.
Can't wait. Now I want to go watch Rogue One or something.
Exactly. Don't worry, I still hold on to the charms of my ancient religion.
Yes.
Which is just go and play and watch the guys on the ice. That's right. A good thing, because I am very fearful of how I'm going to look on that video board if they ever show me on it.
So we're things clear. Are big.
Yeah, and yeah. I'm already there, so don't need more of that, my friend.
I think fans are really going to love it, though. It's you take the size of the old board and just blow it up about three times, and you've got the new one.
I can't wait for people to see it. But there's also a few things for us to cover here on the Canes Cast. One, we're going to be giving you some interviews that Michael Smith did the majority of. As a matter of fact, two-thirds of them. I think I only got like three questions in on one of them.
Yeah, you got in.
With a couple of Hurricanes players. Last week was like kind of a unofficial media day. It's like a meet the media where Brock McGinn, Hayden Fleury, and Warren Fogel will talk to us here on the Canes Cast. And there's lots of questions going on because since last we talked, there was a rookie. Do we want to call it a tournament? Because there's not really a champion. So yeah, a showcase?
I struggled to call it a tournament. I wanted to call it a tournament.
How about a showcase? A prospect showcase between the Nashville Predators, the Carolina Hurricanes,
the Washington Capitals, and the Tampa Bay Lightning.
So those four teams.
A great division, if you ask me.
That would make up
a great division.
I would love that. But those four teams. By the way, that prospect showcase is going to be rotating amongst the cities that those four teams play in, so you're going to be able to see that. The Canes didn't exactly send an A-plus squad to this event. No. We're going to hit that for a second. There's a new defenseman in town, and we know that there's a lot of rumor and talk and everything else out there about another defenseman. We'll try to address that as best we can here on this edition of the Canes Cast. But to you, Michael Smith, who is freshly back from Nashville from that prospect showcase, give me the high spots, give me the concerns, give me the overall package of what the Carolina Hurricanes brought on the ice for 3 days.
Yeah, well, you mentioned it wasn't exactly an A squad. This was the Hurricanes' first year participating in this tournament, this showcase. It was just three games, round robin. The Nashville Predators had a pretty veteran squad, a lot of players who played in Milwaukee last season. The Washington Capitals also had a pretty veteran squad, a lot of folks who played in Hershey last season. The Hershey Bears, by the way, swept by the Charlotte Checkers en route to their Calder Cup championship. The Hurricanes roster, meanwhile, was a lot younger. There were a lot of 18-year-old kids. There were a lot of invites. I'm pretty sure one of them was 17, doesn't turn 18 for another few weeks. So when you consider the fact that they dressed a 17-year-old against some AHL players who had full seasons of experience, the Carolina Hurricanes actually held up very well in the showcase. I thought their best game of the tournament was the second game against the Tampa Bay Lightning. They bounced back from what was not a great first game. And the Washington Capitals, by the way, were credited with 10 goals. We looked at the tape. One of them did not go in. It bounced off the post. Helvig ended up covering it. the referee had no idea. He signaled goal. There's no review or anything, and it was already kind of out of hand at that point. So the Washington Capitals only scored 9 goals, for those keeping score at home.
I don't want to sugarcoat things here, but really, what's the difference between 9 and 10 at that point?
Exactly.
But I'm going to go with the, you want me to be real on this one?
Be real, real.
You want me to be real?
Yes.
They gave up 9 goals.
Yes.
So, well, it matters. So let's not get ticky-tack. If it was the game winner in a shootout,
yeah,
that was 10-9, now we have some cause for angst. But
I'm just setting the record straight here. Oh. But the Hurricanes bounced back from that.
Bare for detail.
And played a much better second game. The third game, I thought, started, it was a tough start for the Hurricanes. They gave up 4 goals in the first period. Jeremy Helvig, I thought, played a lot better than he did in the first game. If it wasn't for him, he made a couple of really, really good saves early. It could have easily been 6 or 7-0 Nashville after the first period. But the Hurricanes, to their credit, and it's impressive to see from such a young team, fought back and got within a goal of tying it, but fell just short. So when you look at the whole package, what you take away is the players you wanted to stand out did stand out. A guy like Jake Bean, who was a late addition to the roster because one of the invites was hurt, he was head and shoulders above everybody else, and that's what you expect. He played 2 games with Carolina last year. He played a full season in Charlotte. His hockey IQ, his vision, was just extremely noticeable. It put his skill set above really everybody else, and he was a huge standout. I thought Chase Prisky in his first action as a Carolina Hurricane was pretty impressive. He can move the puck up the ice. He loves to jump in the play. They fed it. The strategy on the 5-on-3 yesterday seemed to just be to feed him the puck for one-timers at the right circle. Didn't work out, but he got a couple good shots off. Yanni Kuokkanen, who had surgery in March, I thought bounced back with a very good performance in his real first return to game action. You look at his speed and his skill, and he's going to be really one to watch this year with Eetu Luostarinen coming over from Finland. That's an intriguing pair that I imagine we'll see a lot in Charlotte this season. Of course, both players are going to try to make this roster out of camp. Yanni Kuokkanen's played, I think, 11 games with the Hurricanes over 2 seasons, made the team out of camp a couple years ago. So we'll see what happens this year. More depth, I think, up front this year that maybe works against both of them. But they showed some real chemistry, and I like the way both of them played. And Ryan Suzuki, the Hurricanes' first-round pick, was tied for the showcase scoring lead with 6 points, mainly thanks to his 5-point performance there in the second game. But after a tough first game, and really a tough first game for the whole team, Suzuki really took to heart what head coach Ryan Warsawski had to say to him, and worked through some video. The coach showed him really what he wanted to do, what he wanted to see from his game, and Suzuki took those notes and really elevated his game in the second game and looked sharp again in the third game. So that's good to see, encouraging to see from an 18-year-old Ryan Suzuki. So some bright spots for the Hurricanes in what was a short showcase, a chance for these guys to really get some game action in before camp, a little final tune-up, and a chance for us, too, to see these guys on a competitive stage. You know, we saw Ryan Suzuki at development camp, but you really can't properly assess what you have until you see him, you know, playing against opponents, and that's what we were able to do in Nashville. So all in all, a good weekend, and I think the Hurricanes learned a lot, and hopefully you see some of those guys take that confidence and bring it into the start of training camp here this week.
I think all of the points you hit on, like, is the high spots that go for me, and by the way, Michael Smith, this is why he's the Webs, Michael Smith. A treasure and a gem. 11 games exactly in the NHL for Yanni Kuokkanen.
Yes, so 7-4, I believe.
Yep. So you said, I think you knew. That also being said, the Canes had a lot of camp invitees on this roster.
Yeah.
And that means guys they didn't draft, guys they haven't signed, they've invited them specifically for this prospect showcase to maybe give them a look. Do they want to invite them to training camp here that's coming up this week in Raleigh for the Hurricanes? So that's why when you look at the results, I was kind of looking at, okay, who are the guys who the Canes have drafted?
Right.
Who are in the system those are the guys you want to see perform. And as Michael said, those were the guys for all three games in the, and I think we're going to coin it right now, the prospect showcase.
The showcase.
So let us trademark it and get a little bit of cash out of that, or have the prospect showcase be the official sponsor of the Canes Cast.
Yeah.
I mean, we're still looking for them.
We're looking for one.
Still out there for it. If you want to do it, we're open to it. But
we're open to anything.
We truly are.
For whatever.
You know what?
Wink, wink.
We can be had.
Yes.
And we have been many times. Yes. So with that, I just wanted to see, how did Jake Bean do? How would Eetu Luostarinen do coming over playing in this tournament where he was going to be given big minutes?
Yep.
Ryan Suzuki, your first-round pick, you always want to see him play like a first-rounder. And, you know, they truly did. That seems to be the takeaway from me, that players that you wanted to perform at a high level did perform at a high level.
Yeah, absolutely. And you saw some flashes, too, from a guy like Blake Murray, who was a late-round draft pick of the Hurricanes this year. Young kid. You can see why he was a goal scorer. I believe he had 30 goals last season. And you can kind of see why he's got that skill set. He's got a really good shot. He played with Kuokkanen and Luostarinen there on the first line, and I think really benefited from that. That was a really skilled line for the Hurricanes. So you see these things from these kids, and what you hope is that they take some lessons out of that weekend and learn what it takes to play at this level, because that's really one of the main things you have is a guy like Ryan Suzuki has never played a game truly at this level. And that first game against the Washington Capitals, essentially the Hershey Bears, Ryan Suzuki was basically playing at the AHL level, and he has never played that type of hockey. So for him, it was kind of a wake-up call that, you know, this hockey is quicker, it's more physical. You have to get to the dirty areas to score goals, and that's exactly all of that he corrected in the second game. He played with more speed. He got to the net, and that's how he scored his goal. And he played a more physical game. And so if he can take that and translate it to his game on a more consistent basis, the Hurricanes are going to have a very fine player on their hands.
And that's what they're looking for.
Mm-hmm.
And then the Canes went out and added a fine player via free agency.
Yes,
Jake Gardner, defenseman, formerly of the Toronto Maple Leafs, hanging out there. A lot of people thought that he was going to be scooped up early.
Yeah.
But it took a while. And if you're going to look at the, well, why was Jake Gardner still out there? His camp was still opening up. He had a back injury last year, cost him 20 games. But he came back the last two games of the regular season and played in the postseason against the Boston Bruins. He says his back is 100% healthy. He's good to go. And he gets a four-year deal with the Carolina Hurricanes, just north of $4 million a season. Left-handed shot, power play guy, and I think that he's going to just fit in seamlessly when you look at where the Canes have balance, what they need to do. You can put Brett Pesce back on the right side if that's what you want to do.
Yeah.
So you get a lot of options. It does create a few things that we'll get into in a second, but overall, people, it's the, what if Jordan Staal comes back? What's that going to do? You're going to add a really great player to your lineup who can do things that other players can't. What does Jake Gardner do to the Canes lineup? You add a guy who, when he's right, he's going to help your power play, and he's a top four defenseman. I mean, this is a good signing, and you get him, I think, honestly, on the cheap. I was expecting Jake mm-hmm. Gardner to be a guy who signed north of $5, $6 million a season.
Yeah, and I think that's maybe what he was looking for and maybe why it took so long for him to sign a contract.
I also think he was looking for term, because he yes. said that on the conference call. Jake yep. Gardner spoke to the media. They do a conference call. And one of the things he said was he didn't enjoy this process of being an unrestricted free agent and everything that went through it. And there were a lot of offers for him. It's not like nobody gave him offers.
Right.
But he was looking for term, meaning years, not just money. Because I'm sure there might have been more money on the table in other contracts for an AAV for 1 year.
One or 2 years, yeah.
Like he said, he didn't want to go through this again. I didn't want a one-year deal because I don't want to go through this again next year. So he was looking for some security or stability, and the Canes offered a four-year term. And from what Jake told the assembled media on that conference call, they were one of the only teams that were willing to give him a term like that. And
yeah.
he saw what this team was about, and I think that he's just going to come right in and play his game and fit in perfectly. He's a puck-moving defenseman, with how the Canes want to play, I think that he'll be perfect for their system.
Yeah, I talked to Don Waddell in Nashville. He was there for the Sunday game, and I asked him about, you know, what made the Hurricanes comfortable with that longer term. And he said his number one skill is that he can really skate. He's a really smart player. And at 29 years old, there's no fear that his legs are going to fall off in 4 years. So that's why the Hurricanes were comfortable with giving him that longer term. And to Gardner's credit, like you said, he was looking for that stability, and the Hurricanes offered it, even if it was at perhaps less money per year than he would have had on a shorter 1 or 2 year deal. He didn't feel like he needed to prove himself as an NHL defenseman on a 1 or 2 year deal. And that's totally fair. I think when you look at what he's accomplished throughout his career, I think it kind of speaks for itself. He's proven what he can do, and he's going to be a great addition to a Hurricanes power play that struggled last year. And Waddell said, you know, he knows that if the Hurricanes are going to be successful this year, they're going to need a good power play. And Gardner, I think we've talked about it on this podcast before, is that the Hurricanes really don't have a true power play quarterback. But with Gardner, they certainly do, because he can move the puck up the ice. He can take the puck out of the zone. He can find those skilled players down low. He can make the pass. It's not so much about just getting the puck to the point and letting shots go. He's going to be a big addition to the Hurricanes power play, and hopefully improve it to where it's clicking at a much more, even just league average pace. I think it was about 20 to 23 or so last year. And if the Hurricanes can get that in the 10 yep. to 15 range, it'll be great.
Oh, absolutely. And again, this is a guy who has played over 20 minutes a night his entire career. That's right. What he's averaged.
Yep.
So much to what Don Waddell said, you don't have to worry about the legs.
Yep.
Back injuries are always something that are a concern for pro athletes. But with today, it's not like the old days. Today, guys are going to go and do all of the stretching exercises they can find. Yoga, Pilates, you name it, you know, stuff that we would maybe snicker at 10 years ago. This is an everyday routine for these guys. They know how important it is to do that. And plus, I'm going to give the Carolina Hurricanes training staff a whole bunch of accolades and kudos here. I don't know if there's a better strength and conditioning and training staff that works in concert in the league than the Hurricanes. Now, of course, biased because we see it every day.
Right.
But we see how they work in concert with each other, give the information that they get from the player, they get from their doctors, from the team doctors, trainer, head athletic trainer, Dougie Bennett, strength and conditioning coach, Bill Burniston, who, of course, if you listen to the Canescast, we have a lot of fun with, but he is great at his job. They take all this information and they get it out to the parties who need it, and they make sure everybody's ready to go. And last year, and I'll do the knock on wood, or there's nobody at the door.
Who's that at the door? We need like a doorbell drop or something.
No.
No. Okay. No.
This isn't the Wacky Morning Zoo. It's the Canescast.
Got a trombone and a crickets and laughter.
I already went down that road, and I'm not going to drive down it again. Sorry. Fair. Just fair. Saying. Not going to have any mist hover over this thing. Let's just do what we need to do.
Yeah, I got you.
That being said, they make sure that the players were ready. Last year, the Canes had 10 guys who played 82 games. That's unheard of.
Yeah.
Unheard of in today's day and age. So I think that you're going to have a guy who has come to the right team to make sure he gets either the right time off or he's going through the right drills, the right exercises to stay healthy for hopefully all 4 years, and if it works out, maybe beyond for Jake Gardner.
Yeah, and I listened to that conference call after the fact. We were on the plane to Nashville when the conference call took place, and Gardner talked about sort of the summer and how it was challenging from a perspective, maybe more so challenging for his wife, because there was that uncertainty of where his family was going to land after the summer. And another player who had maybe an interesting, somewhat stressful start to his summer was Brock McGinn, who was a restricted free agent, had arbitration rights, basically went up to the last minute before signing a contract, didn't go into arbitration, re-signed a 2-year deal with the Carolina Hurricanes, and we caught up with Brock McGinn at Media Day. Brock McGinn, back on Canescast. Brock, how's your summer been?
It was really good. It was nice. It was short, but that's what you want to be in hockey. I think the shorter your summer is, the better the season was. So it's always nice going back home and seeing family, friends, and just spending time back there. You don't really get to see them too much during the season, so to go back there, it's always special to go home.
And you do that charity game with your brothers in Fergus. How did that go this year, and what was the turnout like? It looked like a pretty big event.
Yeah, it was awesome. There was more teams this year than last year. I think we were up to almost 300 kids in the tournament this year. So everything went well. It went smooth, and I think everybody there enjoyed it, especially the kids. I think they really look forward to that day, and it's just something fun to do in our community.
We back up a little bit earlier in the offseason. How stressful was it to deal with the contract and getting a new one signed? Was that did that weigh on you at all early in the summer?
Yeah, it definitely weighs on you. It's pretty stressful going through that stuff, but I'm happy I got a deal done. I've always wanted to come back here. I love it here. It's nice place to live. It's good community, and fans have been really good lately, so I think it's... this team is going in the right direction, and I want to be a part of it. So I think just coming from last year, it's really exciting, and we've added a couple pieces this year. So I think we're making the right steps going forward.
That was sort of leads into my next question, is how can this team build on the success of last season and come back this year better and stronger?
I think just in general, just going to the playoffs, I think that gives you that much more experience and just shows you what it really takes. And I think from January on, and we had that playoff mentality, and I think that just going into those games, you need to win every game and you got to have that focus. And I think Willie was really good with us in this young group, and whether he comes back or not this year, I think everybody in this room will have him in their mind and just what he's kind of taught this team and put into all of our young players' minds. And just to get to that place, you need to put the work in, and I think that's really going to help us in what we got to do.
So he's not going to start the season with the team, but how big of an influence was Justin Williams on this team last season? And like you were saying, how can you carry sort of what he started into this season as a group?
Yeah, he's just an incredible person on and off the ice. It's you want to have him in your corner. He's just a really true humble guy, and I think just the things that he instilled in all of us is just something that we can take. It's just not even all on the ice, it's off the ice, how he carries himself, how he comes to the rink every day and prepares. So I think if we all try and take little pieces of what Willie has shown us from last year, it can definitely help out this team a lot going forward.
As we draw closer to training camp, can you feel the intensity on the ice ramping up as guys get ready for that first whistle of camp?
Yeah, definitely. I think today was a little more high-paced. There's more guys out there, so it's exciting. I think everybody's a lot more excited coming in this year than the couple past years. I think we raised some eyebrows last year, which is good for us, and I think everybody has us on their map now. I think everybody used to come in and think, oh, we're playing Carolina, but now I think they know they got to come and play a good game to come and beat us.
Last one before we let you go. What do you think of the new white sweaters?
I like them. I think they're pretty cool. They're different. It's a new change here, so I think they'll work out well.
Awesome. Brock McGinn, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Well, let's face it. He's coming off of a postseason where he's etched himself into Hurricanes fans' legend.
Yes.
With not only the goal that won Game 7 in Washington, but a save that gave the Canes the opportunity to go to overtime, then double overtime, and beat the Washington Capitals. And he's one of those players that you look at, and is he going to score 30 goals in this league? Probably not, but he's capable of getting to 20.
Yes.
We've seen that, and he is as tough as a player as you're going to find with what he plays through and his love of the game, the passion he has for it. He's a hell of a good penalty killer too.
Mm-hmm.
So I thought it was a smart move for the Canes to find a way to re-up with Brock McGinn before you really sit down at arbitration and find out what everybody has to say.
Yeah, and he's going to be, I think, an important part of the Hurricanes' bottom six this year. The Hurricanes made a few signings in the offseason to really add some depth to their forward group, but I think McGinn is still an important piece in that group of 12, and it'll be interesting to see where he slots in early on in training camp and then how he sort of acclimates himself throughout camp, throughout preseason, and where he fits in come opening night. But I certainly think that the Hurricanes will be relying upon McGinn this season to be an important piece to their team, even strength and on the penalty kill for sure.
Yeah, without a doubt. And look, there were a couple of other players that also made a name for themselves in that postseason last year and made a name for themselves in training camp last year to get on the team. And one of those players was Warren Fogle. And Michael had a chance to sit down with Warren Fogle, who's a rookie no more, and get his thoughts on what's coming up for the Carolina Hurricanes.
Warren Fogle joining us here on CanesCast. Warren, welcome back to Raleigh. How was your summer?
Summer was good. You know, it's nice to be back with some family and some friends and kind of, you know, try not to think too much about hockey, but you know, I'm really excited to be back right now and get things going.
It was a shorter summer, which means good things. Make the run to the Eastern Conference Finals. What was maybe the biggest thing you took from that playoff run and how this team really came together and maybe proved some people wrong last season?
Yeah, I think that was the message right there. I think we just came together as a group at a right time and during the regular season. And, you know, we carried that momentum into the playoffs. And, you know what, we were a team. Mm-hmm. I think just from watching and hearing from other people, like when you're a team, good things can happen. And, you know, we all believed in each other and we pushed each other. And you could see that during our stretch there.
How can you take that and then build on it right from October 3rd here in this season?
You know what? Yeah, I think we're all excited for this year. And, yeah, you know, like you said, not many people last year thought we'd even get that far. So I think now the mindset is, you know, try to build off that. And, you know, we gained a lot of experience there. There's a lot of young guys like myself that was our first playoffs. And, you know, just try to build off that.
Is that important for young guys like yourself, even guys like Justin Falk or Jacob Slavin, who have played a number of years in the league, just to get that first taste to know what it takes to get there? Is that important?
For sure. I think it's important. I think it just makes you much more hungrier. You know, yeah, you've been there and you're like, I want more. I want another piece of the cake. And, you know, we fell short there, but we were pretty close, you know, and now you just want to get move in the right direction.
Justin Williams was a big part of the team last year, obviously. Not going to be with the team to start the season, but what can you take from his leadership and what he showed last season and apply it to this group this season?
I think you just, you know what, I don't think anything will really kind of, you know, Willie did so much for us on the ice, but especially off the ice. I don't know if really anyone can really replace him. You know, everyone's going to try to do their part to step up their leadership role, but I think what I learned is that it's a full 82 season, yeah, and you have to be consistent. And, you know, sometimes you just got to relax. I think Willie's just so composed. He's so good at, you know, forgetting about a bad shift and moving on to the next play. And you know there's still a chance he could come back, right? The door didn't shut really, yeah. So hoping maybe he can come back.
Yeah, headed into year two with Rod Brindamore, do you know what kind of to expect this year heading into training camp, heading into the season, what those expectations are?
Yeah, for sure. I think, yeah, our team really took a lot of pride in working hard, and coming into this offseason, going into the offseason, I knew I wanted to put in more work, and you know, I'm excited to get things going. And I think for the team, all of us respect Roddy, and I think that went a long way for how much we all respect him.
On the ice, as we get closer to camp, can you feel the intensity ramping up as guys start to really get excited and juiced for the start of camp?
Yeah, the skates are getting more competitive, you know, more chirping, and, you know, I think guys are just ready to get things going here.
Awesome, Warren. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks.
Good talk.
Thank you.
You're welcome. It was good. I was just hovering during these interviews.
Well, you got some questions in on the next interview.
Oh, I know I did, but like that was, I had other things that I was doing.
You had other things. I was on podcast duty, roping in players to talk to us on CanesCast. It was actually the first time we used this new equipment that we're using now. The first time we used it during those interviews, and a lot of the players were impressed We're legit now, I think.
Well.
Somewhat legit.
Somewhat legit. The equipment is legit.
Yeah.
And one half of the hosts is in question as to their legitimacy.
I don't know if the equipment makes us legit, but the equipment is legit.
Well, it makes the podcast legit.
That's true.
Don't know what it does for us.
Yeah.
Maybe it raises our...
The jury's still out.
It raises our value from, you know, half to maybe a full point.
Yeah. 5-star review for good equipment.
Absolutely. Well, somebody who last year, and I did get a chance to jump in on this interview,
yes.
Defenseman Hayden Fleury, who, you know, Michael, he had a tough year. I think he expected to be a regular and everyday player, or at least be with the Carolina Hurricanes for the entire season. But in what I thought was not just a shrewd move, but a smart move by the coaching staff, head coach Rod Brind'Amour, and the organization, you can't have Hayden Fleury sitting in the press box for 35 games. So what did they do? They let him go to Charlotte, and he played with the Checkers, and he played. And the only way I really believe for guys like Hayden Fleury to get better is you got to do it on the ice.
Yes.
I'm not a big believer of, well, if you practice every day with the NHL team. No, get him on the ice, get him 20, 23 minutes a game at the AHL. Let him dominate there to know that he's got skills that he can do things. And then in the postseason last year, he was able to do that. And Hayden Fleury has got a huge opportunity this year for the Carolina Hurricanes to not only be with the team all year in a defenseman capacity, but be a contributor on the ice. And Michael Smith and some other guy at the end of the interview caught up with Hayden Fleury.
Hayden Fleury joining us on Canescast. Hayden, how's your summer been?
It was good. You know, after the Calder Cup final there, got home about June or just before Father's Day. And then, you know, spent time with family, went on a golf trip to Pebble Beach, and then came back 3 weeks ago and been skating and working out with Billy B and Slavo for most of the part.
And how has that been? I know Billy B's probably cracking the whip.
Yeah, Billy's, especially with more guys coming back, Billy's trying to flex his muscles on us and prove to some of the guys what it takes to be here.
Of course. What was the experience like after the playoff run here, being able to join Charlotte and be a part of that championship team?
Yeah, all positive. I mean, you know, Charlotte all year, it's such a great team, and it seems like whatever they, whatever adversity they had, they always had the answer for it. And whether it was injuries or whether it was, you know, just going through a slump, they always seemed to just get better. And, you know, going down there, and we lost the first game. We won the next four to win the championship. Right. So you know, it was just a lot of you know, a lot of positive notes to end the season on.
Do you feel like you can build off of personally your performance during that playoff run and carry it into this season?
Yeah, I think it's time to take a step and be here and contribute here, not just play, but be an effective piece and be an everyday player, and that's my goal. And I've been working hard this summer to continue that confidence of being where I was to where I am now. And I think I think this year is a big year for me, and I need to be prepared for it.
What mentally, when you see the news that Calvin DeHaan gets traded, does it go through your mind that okay, there's legitimately going to be a spot that I can claim in camp? Does that really go through your mind?
Yeah, that would that was a big thing. I had some phone calls with people afterwards, and it was an opportunity here. And I think if I play my best, and if I play the way I know I can play, and I play the way other people know I can play, I think I have a role on this team and can help contribute every night.
What was maybe one of the biggest things you learned from last season, whether it was up here with head coach Rod Brind'Amour or down in Charlotte with Mike Vellucci and working through the playoffs there?
I think just how to deal with adversity. I think both coaches knew how to deal with adversity, and I think both did it in different ways. But, Mike Vellucci really never got down on that team the whole time, and I think that's what led to – they had a lot of comebacks, a lot of games where they were down three and would come back and win. And, he always preached never get down on each other, never do that, and just be a team-first mindset. And I think that's really what – helped the whole organization, really. I think even up here, everything was team first the whole year. And, you know, both teams were so tight, and I got to experience that. And, you know, I think that's a big reason why both teams went so far.
When you look at the moves the Hurricanes have made this summer, adding guys like Eric Halla, Ryan DeZingle, does that get you excited to see that the group is getting better from what it was in May?
Yeah, no, it's really exciting. I mean, Zinger's been here a couple days. He's already annoying, so we can get that out of the way. And, you know, he's a good player. I've skated with him the past couple days. But, no, those guys are both, you know, established, and, you know, it's very exciting.
I heard that Jordan Martinook took a couple of holes off of you last week playing golf. Is there any truth to that rumor, and how does that happen?
So we'll just say that Marty's team name in our fantasy league is Sandbagger 48, and no one made that name but him. So we'll just start with that.
At the same time, though, back to last year, I know that you wanted to spend the whole time up with the NHL, but can you look back on last year and say, the fact that I got to play and got in all of those games, it really did prep you for this opportunity that's coming in front of you here this year?
Yeah, for sure. I think I ended up playing 30 games, I think, with Charlotte last year. I think it was right around 30, and then the last two series. So if I'm sitting those 30 games, I'm not gonna get any better from that. So I think, you know, especially with Ryan Warsawski down there, I think he's a really good head coach. He'll be a really good head coach, and he's a really good D coach. And he did a lot of work with me getting better at things that I was lacking in. And I think, you know, it would have been easy to go down there and pout or not work. But I think, you know, he put me in the right mindset. And I think if you look at the games where I'd get called up, I think the one game I always looked at was the Columbus game. Was I came up and I felt better than I did when I went down. So I think that was always a positive.
I know it sounds cliche, but how important is chemistry? Like, this group seems to like each other. Like, this is like a Bantam team, or like kids in the neighborhood who all play with each other. How important is that to this organization's success?
Yeah, it's, you know, I think it's been, I haven't really, since I've been drafted here, it hasn't, the team just keeps getting closer and closer. And I mean, even today, like, or yesterday, sorry, you know, eight guys are going out for lunch. And it's just the little things like that. The more time you spend with guys and the more you learn to care about the guys, the harder you'll play for each other.
Training camp's just about a week and a half away at this point. It'll be a week, I guess, when folks are hearing this interview next week, less than a week, really. What's going to be different heading into year two with Rod Brind'Amour? Is it just a matter of knowing what to expect from him as a head coach and vice versa, really, too?
Yeah, I think the expectation's going to be higher. I mean, everyone in our room believed that we were going to be a playoff team, but now that we're a playoff team, I think now it's time to take that next step and, you know, be a contender throughout the regular season and then, you know, hit the ground rolling for playoffs. So I think that's just one of the things where it's going to be more, the expectations are going to be a little higher on everyone this year.
Awesome. Hayden Fleury joining us here on Canescast. Hayden, thanks.
Yeah, thank you.
It'll be interesting to see, because we did this interview, Media Day happened before the Jake Gardner move. It'll be interesting to see how that impacts where Fleury fits into the lineup. One thing to take into account is Trevor Van Riemsdyk, and he's coming off shoulder surgery in, I guess it was late April, early May, I guess, right after the first couple of games of the second round there. Trevor Van Riemsdyk isn't going to be, I don't think, ready for the start of the season. He's going to be skating, but he's not going to be skating with contact. I don't think it's going to be too long after the start of the season when he gets back, but I don't think he's going to be ready for opening night. So perhaps that opens up an opportunity for Fleury to step in, because now you do have to factor Jake Gardner into the Hurricanes' defensive pairings. And I guess things get a bit tougher for a guy like Hayden Fleury, who, you know, after Calvin DeHaan was traded to Chicago, you kind of figured Hayden Fleury would just slide into that spot. Now the Hurricanes add another very talented NHL defenseman, and Hayden Fleury is again now facing a tough climb into the roster. But a few things could affect it, and one of those is Trevor Van Riemsdyk and his injury. And another is if the Hurricanes make another move on defense, because there has been talk, there have been rumors. Justin Falk's name has been tossed around in trade rumors now for what feels like, what, 2-3 years?
2 years at least.
Yeah.
Let's split the difference between 2 and 3 and call it 2.5.
Yeah.
I mean, because I kind of remember it. Trade deadline 2 seasons ago. you started hearing, well, could Justin Falk be on the move?
Right, and now he's entering the last season of his contract, so it's only natural, again, that his name pops up in trade discussions because the Hurricanes, if they don't see him here long-term, would obviously like to get something for him, either at some time throughout the season before the trade deadline, so that they don't lose him for nothing in free agency. That's going to be something to watch in the coming days to see how that shakes out, because that, again, could affect how the Hurricanes' defensive pairings look at the start of the season. And it could give a guy like Hayden Fleury or even Jake Bean, Chase Prisky, these guys fighting for spots, a chance to maybe crack the NHL roster. So certainly something to watch in the coming days, because it could have ramifications. And ramifications, too, for the Hurricanes' cap situation. Don't think either of us predicted that the Hurricanes would be a cap team. If you would have asked us in April, will the Hurricanes be a cap team in 2019-20, I think we would have said no.
I did have this conversation with somebody yesterday, though. Part of the Canes being a cap team, though, is a little bit of a mirage.
It's dead money.
Because the $6.5 million or $6.3 million that they picked up in the Patrick Marleau contract are sitting against the cap this year.
Yeah.
It's really only $800,000 in actual money for the buyout, but the cap hit this year is $6 million. So while, yes, the Canes are a cap team on paper, there's $6 million of it that, as you said, it's dead money. It's not anywhere. They're still paying off a forward. I can't think of his name, but they bought him out a few
Russian
years
forward.
Ago. Yeah, that rings a bell.
It's like two and change, too. So there's about $9 million tied up in money that the Hurricanes can't spend.
I'm going to be a little snarky about that.
Okay.
I might have called that one after the signing and actually before the signing and before the first signing. Just saying.
The Hurricanes took a chance. And
that was great for a year.
It didn't pay off.
There are some players in the National Hockey League that I would tell them, I am not going to give you an extension. You're not going to get term from me, but we're going to have a handshake agreement. You'll have a rollover 1 year deal, but you're playing for 1 year. And the second you drop, bye bye.
Yeah.
And you would get somebody who would play at a Hall of Fame level every year as long as they knew their money was attached to it. I'd even tell them, if you play better, we'll give you more money next year. How about that?
So that one's been on the books for a while.
And it's not coming off the books
for another two seasons, I think.
Yep. You're right.
But like you said, that Marleau 6.3 ish falls off after this season, which. Yep. Creates obviously a good bit of cap space for the Hurricanes heading into next year. Don Waddell and the front office don't seem too concerned about it, because it's really only tying their hands a little bit this year. They can get around it by sending players up, sending players down. If you look at what Cap Friendly has projected right now, I think they have the Hurricanes carrying 23, the max of 23 players. I don't think the Hurricanes are going to carry that.
They didn't do that last year. I don't see them doing that this year.
Right. So they can create some cap flexibility by assigning some players to Charlotte, which I expect they'll do. You might see just a decent bit of player movement so that the Hurricanes can really stay under that cap ceiling.
All right. A lot of people like to, play the game with us. Like, how about this? Or what do you think of that? Why don't you and I do that, and we can kind of use it as a modified...
If you like it, you can take it. If you don't, send it right back.
But not exactly.
Okie dokie.
If you know what I'm driving at here.
I know what you're driving at.
All right. So...
Win in Rome.
Yes, go on. If we were to look at the Carolina Hurricanes in the salary cap situation that they're in right now, Michael Smith of the web, you understand, like we said, the money that's out there, or dead money that's out there for contracts. You've got Patrick Marleau's money this year at $6.25 million, and then another forward who they bought out a few years ago at $2.3. So that's $8.5 million of two players who are not on the Canes roster who count against the salary cap. So when people say the Canes are a salary cap team, really they're at $74 million, not 83.1 right now. But there are a couple of players who we know are not going to be on the NHL roster. And as it stands right now, just looking at the defense, there are eight defensemen who are listed. We know the Canes aren't going to carry eight defensemen. They might carry seven,
right?
But they're not going to carry eight. So that means if we're just going to do the sheer numbers game, Gustav Forsling or Hayden Fleury are going to probably get some time in the minors, right? We'll probably just look at that.
Yeah, the one thing with Fleury is he'd have to clear waivers, and that's sure kind of will. A dicey situation.
Forsling does not at this point, right?
Yeah, he's Forsling still on his... can go to the minors, I believe.
So we believe right now. So
or that's... in any case, I mean, I don't think the Hurricanes would think twice about putting him on waivers in this case. Yeah. But
that's $800,000 that comes off of the cap.
Yep.
And then we look at the, you know, the rest of the lineup as far as the forwards who go and are concerned. You've got Clark Bishop, who got a new deal at $700,000. Brian Gibbons, who has a $725,000 deal. And then Marty Natchez, is he on the team? Is he not on the team? But he can go down to the minors because he's on his entry-level deal. He's at $860,000. So you look, the Canes have players who are not going to be on this roster who are making money that will get them underneath.
Yeah.
So,
and I expect all three of those players that you mentioned, I expect we'll probably see at least a game with the Hurricanes
of course,
this season.
Yeah.
But I don't know if all three of them make the opening night roster. One of them, perhaps, but certainly not all three.
Yeah. So, you know, those are numbers that we're looking at right now. So those are four players right there, and I am not good at math, but that gets you underneath the salary cap.
Yeah, the Hurricanes will be fine. They're not totally concerned about it. Now, will it affect their ability to add a player at the deadline? Yes. The Hurricanes probably, you know, unless they're sending money the other way, which you wouldn't really do at the deadline if you're a contending team, yeah, the Hurricanes probably won't be able to add at the deadline. But at the same time, they've never really been that team other than 06 when they added Doug Waite and Mark Recchi there in the second half of the season. They haven't really loaded up at the deadline, and you saw how well that worked out for Columbus last year.
And the deals that we see them make were, especially last year, the big deal, Nino Niederreiter, was basically a player for player, swapping Victor Rask for Nino Niederreiter. Now, the money that the Canes got in return for Nino Niederreiter, you have to say, even though he made more than Victor Rask.
It was about $1 million more, maybe.
Yeah, it's $5.2 million for Nino Niederreiter, and I think Victor Rask was
four or five.
So, yeah, I mean, $1 million difference. So it wasn't like they added a ton of salary, but they added a bunch of production for it.
Yes, they did.
So, and it's great to see Nino Niederreiter back. He got in yesterday. Actually, he got in late 2 days ago, depending on when you're listening to Canes Cast here. But that's not what the Canes do. The Canes aren't going to go out and add some high-budget player. Plus, it's hard to do that today now.
Yeah, it is. It costs a lot in terms of assets.
Assets, and then, of course, you got to fit them under the cap.
Yeah, and the Hurricanes, as you've seen, aren't ones to really depart with draft picks willy-nilly. They want draft picks because they see that as opportunities to potentially develop NHL players. You know, with the Marlowe thing, they essentially bought a first-round draft pick, and they were comfortable doing that and, you know, pushing themselves up near the cap. Yeah. So the Hurricanes aren't, we can say it now, in September, they're not going to be a deadline team. If there's a trade made, it's going to have to be a one-for-one hockey deal that might get done like the Nino Niederreiter deal did last year in January, well ahead of the deadline. So that's really where it's going to impact the team most when it comes to this season. But once that Marlowe money falls off the books, they're not really going to have a problem. They will have to pay Andrei Svechnikov in a couple of years. That's going to be a nice contract.
There'll be some other contracts, though, that will be coming off of the books between now and then.
Yeah, it's a problem for another year.
Yeah, it's nothing to worry about right now. But also along those lines, if the Canes do move the salary of Justin Falk, and we can only speculate on Elliot Friedman put it out there. We love Elliot, does great work. So if he's putting it out there, this is not some throwing it to the wall and seeing if it sticks rumor mill that a lot of people out there at Uncle Chucky's Basement Hockey blog.
My homepage.
Exactly.
Yeah, the page I visit every day.
That's I was just going to say.
It gets 30 page views a month, and it's all me.
All you, every day.
Yes.
Thank you. And then he's so happy on 31 days. Yeah. He gets that extra
He's
view.
Really mad in February.
Oh, well, of course. Who wouldn't be? Unless it's a leap year.
We'll have to have Elliot on the podcast.
I would love to get Elliot on the podcast. But we can't comment really on anything coming back for lots of reasons. As we tell you before, both Michael and I are employees of the Hurricanes Club. And the motto of the Canes Cast, Michael Smith, is
we are dumb.
No.
Oh. Yeah.
They don't
Sorry,
tell us
anything.
Sorry,
that was Uncle Chucky's hockey blog.
Thank you. They don't tell us anything.
And we don't know anything.
Which, Michael gave you the cliff notes, we're dumb.
Yeah.
So, but they don't tell us, and we, you know, we can't really say, oh, we know this is happening, especially if nothing happens. But, like it, keep it. Justin Falk is not on the Hurricanes opening night roster.
I am going to, I mean, I would like to take it, but I'm going to send it back.
You think he is going to be on the Canes opening night roster?
Wait, did you say is not?
I said he's not going to be on the Canes opening night
roster. I would like to send it back, yes. But I'm going to take it.
For right now.
Because I just think that's sort of the direction it's heading at this point. The signing of Gardner kind of put that writing on the wall. Justin Falk's a great person. I think he's a really good player.
Minnesota Vikings fan, that notches him way up in my book.
Right. But yeah, I don't foresee him being on the opening night roster. He's here today skating on the ice at PNC Arena, if anybody is keeping score of that. A number of Hurricanes players are, which I guess makes sense because, as we discussed, camp does start tomorrow, so everyone has to be in town.
Well, they could get in tomorrow morning if
that's
they really
true.
Wanted to.
Really pushing it.
That's pushing the envelope.
Straight off the plane and into the whatever testing they do.
All right, we have all this new equipment. We actually did a Canes cast without this. This is the first time we're doing an official Canes cast with this equipment.
Yes.
I would like to think, do you have one? Oh, you don't!
Josh Holdner helped me out, though.
Go ahead and go to the people who bail you out regularly.
If Justin Williams is retired, do you see him as more of a coach, either in a developmental role or an assistant coach, or front office personnel? It's sort of a more of a question, yeah. But...
He says you can change this, and you didn't. You just went verbatim again.
Yeah, I just read the tweet.
So Josh Holdner, who has tweeted every episode of this show, even before we were doing them.
If Justin Williams is retired, he will get into coaching. At some point. It doesn't have to be right away, because I think all players, once they retire, like to take a step back. Cam Ward's doing that. He said he'd love to get back into the game, and I really do think he will at some point, but it's not going to be right now.
Yeah, I'll take it. But yeah. I could also, going back to the original query, I could see him stepping into both. I could see Justin Williams being a general manager of a National Hockey League team. Mm. I could definitely see that.
GM Willie.
I could totally see that. But I think behind the bench, that might be the way that he would want to go. The easiest way, you know, you go in and, you know, become an assistant. He can do whatever he wants to do.
Yeah.
He's that kind of person in my book. Whatever he sets his mind to, he'll find a way to accomplish it.
Yeah, for sure. So. I wonder if he takes sort of that Ron Francis path of, you know, Francis sort of dabbled in everything before he sort of settled on what he liked to do best, and that's in the front office role. And, of course, now he's the general manager of the Seattle team, yet unnamed. Saw Ron Francis in Nashville. He was there to take in a couple
Seattle,
games of the tourney.
Michael Smith's.
I suggested that to him. He said, not a chance.
Oh, my goodness. Your face as the logo would be amazing.
He was like, yeah, you no.
All right.
Thanks, but no thanks. Yeah, actually, he just said no thanks.
Just no. Not even thanks. I know, Ron.
I'm
he would have
kidding.
Said thanks.
Yeah,
for sure. Thanks. That's your idea. No thanks.
It was good to
he
see.
He would throw in. He would throw in a little dig after the thank you.
Yeah, it was good to see Ron Francis again. He's a busy man. He's got a tall task ahead of him.
Oh, you ran into the Canes' former general manager.
Yep. He was in Nashville. He was actually on our flight to Nashville. He's still in Raleigh. Still in the area. Won't move out to Seattle for another few months, but is very much looking forward to that challenge. He said,
well, "Sure,
I mean, you tough get a chance to
you
follow.
Get a chance to build a franchise from the ground up.
Yeah, yeah. I imagine that's got to be intriguing for, you know, whoever he brings onto his staff. Of course, he added Ricky Olczyk, who was an assistant GM here, also with Francis a few years back. It's got to be an intriguing task for those guys." To start from scratch, you know, they're not inheriting anything. Yeah. They are in control of what's going to happen. Now, the expansion draft is going to be wildly different. They're not going to get a lot of help from general managers around the league.
They say it's going to be wildly different, but from what I've read up, it's not like they're really going to protect everything the way that, you know, it was the Wild West, no pun intended, for Las Vegas. You know, it was a big gamble for teams because nobody knew what was going on. That was a pun intended.
Right.
That being put everything on the table, Michael, I don't think they're going to change this up that much. I really don't. I just think that GMs around the league are going to be smarter about it.
Yeah, that's exactly it. They're not going to fall into the same traps. I think everyone maybe sort of panicked the last expansion yes. draft and went, oh, God, we're going to lose a player. But it's a player. It's one player. So I think you're going to see less deals made. You're not. Florida gave them, you know, a couple of players. Columbus gave them a player or two. You're not going to see that again.
William Karlsson, how's that working out?
Yeah.
So, you know, it's going to be different, but from my knowledge, the rules are still, you know,
yeah, the rules
what,
you, are
what
exactly
you're going to protect,
same.
But yeah. the folks around the league are smarter about how they're going to protect players, who they're going to protect, and they've also put in preventative measures for young players that won't even be eligible. Like, everybody was so worried, oh, what about Marty Natchez? He's not going to be eligible for
right.
the draft.
He doesn't have to be protected.
So
he's auto-protected.
And that is a smart move that you have to have.
Yep.
All right. Well, that'll just about do it, but you were in Nashville.
Yes.
Did you do any hot chicken? Did you get anything new?
I was a monster, just eating everything.
Yes.
It's a good food city.
Yes.
I don't know if there's really a lot of healthy options in Nashville. It's all delicious and
chicken.
Fried and, yeah.
And it's part of the four food groups.
Barbecue, yeah.
That's part of the four food groups in my world.
We had barbecue. We had hot chicken, of course. Went to Hattie B's again because me and TV's Mike Maniscalco went to Hattie B's once.
We did, but we got in right
it was
under-
late.
Under the closing bell.
So there wasn't a line. So this time when I went back, I was like, oh, I forgot that there's usually a line here. And there was a line, and it was hot, and we sweated a lot. But we got in, and we ordered our food, and it was better than when we had it because it was fresher. And still think I like hot chicken takeover in Ohio better. In Ohio, specifically Columbus.
Yeah. It's one of my favorite lunch spots on the road, by the way.
It is. Columbus. The pimento mac and cheese at Hattie B's is delicious. That's probably the best thing. The chicken was good, though. But I don't know. I think I might like hot chicken takeover better.
All right. Well, we can go back and do the challenge or go to a different place in Nashville this year.
I also had hot chicken at The Row,
okay.
which was a cool spot. Had some live
there's
music.
There's one called Party Foul. I've never heard.
Yes, there is.
So
yeah.
That one I've heard is pretty good as well.
And the new thing on Broadway now is for all these singers to have their own bars.
Oh, yeah.
Kid Rock's is next to Luke Bryan's, which is next to Jason Aldean's.
Yeah.
They all have a place.
Yeah.
It's like the thing.
Yeah. Well, eventually it becomes a thing.
Yes.
Until it's not.
And it's just, it is amazing to see just how much that city has grown in the last 5 years.
I think first time I went there was 8 years ago,
mm-hmm.
and it's incredible just the difference between 8 years ago and today.
So I was like, what led to that resurgence, do you think? Like, what led to it becoming a more popular bachelorette spot than Las Vegas?
I think, one, it became easier to get flights to. It's in the middle of the country, so instead of people on the East Coast having to fly to the West Coast to Vegas or California or anything like that, it's kind of more of a meet me in the middle. There's so much entertainment that you do not have to pay for. Like, you walk into the honky tonks, there's no cover.
Right.
You just walk in.
You could stand outside. They all have windows open and the
you can
bands
hear
are right
you
there.
I think there's that. I think the food scene has become amazing the last 8-9 years.
Yeah.
And the other part too, you've got the NFL, you've got the National Hockey League and the Predators. I really think it's like anything. How do certain colleges get a ton of exposure? Like Virginia Tech. You go back to Virginia Tech, and it's funny. I got to go back to the late 90s. Virginia Tech, nobody really knew what Virginia Tech was, and then here comes Michael Vick, and they're this really good program, and they play for a national championship, and then the next year enrollment goes up, and it becomes harder to get into. Like, you see that. Well, Nashville has gotten this reputation of, oh, have you gone to a game in Nashville? Huge party.
Yeah.
Awesome time. Got to go. And that's, I think, what happened to it. I think that's where it grew.
Yeah. I wonder, too, if has
also
country...
Also, no income tax in Tennessee.
Yeah. Has country music become more popular, too? Is that maybe part of it? Because, like, Broadway's always been Broadway, right? Like, there's always been bands and hidden talents. And
That's a good question. I think that country music has become
more mainstream,
more popular. I think it's become more pop.
Okay, yeah.
That's... Like, a lot of country music now is kind of what pop music used to be. And I think it's become a little bit more accessible for people because, you know, most folks hear country music and they think of Hank Williams Sr. You know, they think of Johnny Cash, which is a great artist to think of. But, you know, not everybody's cup of coffee. And now all of a sudden you've got all of these stars, and they are stars like Jason Aldean. Yeah. And you run down the list of Luke Bryan, all these guys who
I can tell
everybody
you.
Knows their music and their songs.
He's got a lot of money because that place is massive.
Good.
Yeah.
Good for him.
Yeah, good for him.
All right. Well,
but it is just interesting because, and I think to your point too, I think the Predators got good when the Nashville popularity was rising. So it's kind of gone hand in hand. They've had that huge surge and Nashville is now super popular and the arena is right there on the Broadway strip.
Right downtown.
We were on the rooftop of Tootsie's Saturday night and we just watched the flood of people exit the Hootie and the Blowfish concert at Bridgestone. And they just all, well, not all of them, but most of them just filtered right onto Broadway. And it's, I mean, what a spot.
Yep. Good spot.
Yeah.
We'll be there in a couple of weeks.
Yes, we will.
That will actually be a televised on Fox Sports Carolina's preseason hockey game. Puck drop at 8 o'clock Eastern, 7 o'clock Central. No pregame show, no Hurricanes Live. But we will be bringing you all of the exciting hockey action from Bridgestone Arena for the final preseason game for the Carolina Hurricanes.
And then the Hurricanes play there in the regular season on February 18th, I believe.
I think that's right.
It's in February. It's a midweek game.
And correction, September 25th, there's still two more preseason games after that. The Canes play Nashville and then close out against Washington.
Yes.
Here in this very building, PNC Arena.
That Nashville game on Friday, I believe, is their final game of the preseason, and then the Hurricanes will close out their preseason against the Washington Capitals, part of that Caniac Carnival free preseason game. Yep. All tickets have been claimed, but you can still access the wait list. Some tickets might pop up, so get your name on the wait list just in case, because we might make some more tickets available, and you'll have a chance to come to that free game.
Sounds like a plan. February 18th in Nashville.
Perfect.
It's the regular season game. So, you know, it's a Tuesday night.
Oh, a Tuesday night in Nashville.
So plan accordingly.
4 days after Valentine's Day.
That is also right.
Math.
You're good at that. You're good at the dates.
No, I'm bad.
Okay.
Terrible.
Well, I notice I don't even attempt math. I was just throwing out salary numbers earlier on this thing going, I think it adds up to this. Nobody's going to.
Yeah, well, when, you know, whatever.
I'm sure we have fact checkers out there. The grammar Maybe. Police and the math fact checkers.
Yeah, we should have a segment at the end where we check our facts. I'm sure we got tons
of
things
wrong. I don't think
anybody's
ever done that, ever.
It's new. It's completely new.
We would also have to have somebody listen
here.
To this here,
yeah.
Tortured to what we do, and listening for, they'd be at some point, they would just run out of here screaming.
They would, yeah.
It's too many errors.
You guys aren't professional.
Look at this.
Amateur hour.
This is Bush.
Audrey.
This is Bush.
Seems like a good note to end on.
I think so. That'll do it for the Web's Michael Smith.
And TV's Mike Maniscalco.
We will talk to you next week with training camp on the line. Oh, you were jumping the gun.
Jump the gun.
Thank you.
Now bye you bye. Can say it.
Okay, bye.
Thank you.